there, Rainmakers. Welcome to the show. As always, I am Brian Clark, founder and CEO of Copyblogger Media. Robert is off today, somewhere in a metaphorical coal mine getting his work done. But that's okay, because we've got a special guest that will more than compensate for the lovely deep tones of Mr. Bruce. And her name is Joanna Weeb. She is of Copy Hackers, a site you should be paying religious attention to if you're not already. Joanna completely crushed it at last year's Authority live event, talking about copywriting and testing the difference between this word and that word, this button and that button. It's fascinating stuff. And of course, we've been talking a bit about split testing in the previous episodes. So I thought, let's get someone in here who really kind of lives and breathes both aspects of this. She's a creative copywriter, and yet she understands the importance of figuring out scientifically what works and what doesn't. Joanna, thank you so much for being here.
Brian, thank you so much for having me here. Because I've been admiring you for so long, it always gets me nervous to hear you say this stuff. I feel a little nervous now, what if I disappoint him? Anyway, no, it's great for you to have me here. Thank you.
Oh, that's just silly. Come on now. All right. Now that we've got that out of the way, why don't you share a little bit about your story, kind of how you got to being this really go-to expert and running it through copy hackers like you do. But you've got a story that got you there in the first place. Everyone does. I want to hear yours.
Right. Yeah. Mine is, I think a lot of people, you kind of fall in to things. So mine came about, I was a creative writing student in undergrad, really liked that, went to Japan for a year to teach while writing a book, didn't write a word, came back, almost went to law school, and then some stuff happened in my life, and I kind of had this switch where I knew I didn't want to do some of the things I'd done. And at that point, I got offered a job at an agency as what they were calling a creative writer. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. So I did that for a couple years and then moved over to Intuit, the tech company of TurboTax and QuickBooks and all that stuff. And worked as their senior copywriter there for about 5 years. And it was really in that time that I kind of figured out a bit more about what copywriting is and what's so powerful. I was already a couple years into my career as a copywriter, but I think one of the challenges for me was that I'd been calling myself a creative writer when it's not about creative at all. But when you're in an agency, that's a better title to have than a copywriter, which just sounds dull and boring or something, yeah. Which is a crazy idea, right? But that's where I was. Then I went to Intuit, and there was this huge testing culture. And I was like, tell me more. I like it. When I was going through the whole law school thing, my favorite part of the LSATs were the puzzles and that figure something out and see how it works, right? That's always been very interesting to me. And that when you move over to this testing culture as a copywriter and have everything so informed by data, it was just this revelation to me. I loved it. And so I was there for about 5 years, and I worked with Conversion Rate Experts for a while too, which is one of the first conversion rate optimization consultancies. They're incredible out of the UK. And then I went out on my own and started Copy Hackers to help the smaller businesses that don't get access to the same sorts of resources that the Intuits of the world get, and that can't work with the Conversion Rate Experts because they can't, as much as it's worth it, they just truly don't have the budget right now to afford somebody to come in and do their optimization for them. So that's what Copy Hackers was for. And so we've been at that for about 3 years. And yeah, last year I got to talk at Copy Blogger Authority, which was one of the highlights so far of my career. It's been very cool.
Awesome. That's a great story. A couple things come to mind. Sonia Simone says she will always take a creative writing degree because you can teach people the testing and the principles of copy and all that, but you can't teach initial drive and talent to actually want to write. So that's why Robert was a poet, and now he's a VP of marketing. That was a tough case, but don't tell
me. He was a poet?
Yeah, he still is, actually.
Well, yeah, I guess that never stops, right?
Yeah. But yeah, that's how we first met. And the other thing is, I did really well on the LSAT and unfortunately did go to law school. Actually, I don't mind that I went to law school. It was the years of practice before I quit that was annoying. So I think you took the right path.
Thank you.
Anyway, okay, well, let's kind of get into this. We're going to really talk about split testing fundamentals. You know, the technology keeps getting easier for normal people like, you know, creative writing majors and ex-attorneys to use. But we have to have the proper parameters here. So we've been talking a lot about getting people on an email list, building an audience as a precursor to maybe starting a new business or a content marketing initiative for an existing business, whatever the case may be. So when you're building an audience and you're starting a new site, you know, you have your ideas, right, about what's a good headline and what's good body copy and what's the right button text and, you know, all these things. But really, where do we start when we're trying to build an audience in a new context?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for us, it's going to be a new audience. But naturally, of course, as we all know, the audience exists. So where are they and what are they doing and what are they looking for? And so I would start and have started just by going out and doing that initial research, right? If you're interested in building that audience, getting to a point where you can put messages in front of them and test those messages initially, right? In those early building stages, obviously, I think, and I'm sure everybody does this, but maybe they don't consciously do it or do it with like tactics that are specific and kind of documented along the way. So like with everything we do in any sort of optimization, which is business optimization or conversion rate optimization or whatever, optimizing your copy, it all starts with going out and listening to your prospects. You might not have a single customer or a subscriber yet, but they're out there and they're talking and they're doing that all online in this very documented way. By that, I mean like they're in forums or they're leaving reviews on the Amazon products that they buy that are related to what you want to sell. All those sorts of things, going out and learning and just soaking them up, which every copywriter, I think, knows, but I don't know that the world necessarily knows.
Well,
that.
It's interesting, and I'm so glad you started there because that is where the battle is either lost or partially won before you ever think about testing. And you're right. Pre-internet, every copywriter, direct response to creative agency type, that's the first job. And they do this insane dive down into who are these people that we're trying to reach. And I hope everyone still does that. And I say it every time I can, but sometimes I think when it comes to content as opposed to pure sales copy, mm-hmm. people think maybe it's not so necessary. It's just whatever I want to talk about.
And then
it doesn't connect with anyone. And they're like, why? I'm like,
Exactly. Like, why is my blog dead? Right? Like, why is nobody reading it? Why is nobody signing up for it? Why is nobody coming to it at all and telling their friends about it? But naturally, unless you're, you know, Seth Godin, but then you already have a brand established. So if you don't have this established brand, I think it's very hard to build anything if you're not building it, obviously, right? Like, I feel like I'm saying the most obvious thing right now, but if you're not building it for that audience, that means you have to absolutely know that audience intimately. Like you said, copywriters, I mean, I used to go sit in, you know, if you're trying to attract students or write copy for students, you go sit among them and listen to them, right? And they don't know you're listening to them, but you're listening to them and you're eavesdropping to hear.
And now we have social media, which is the biggest eavesdropping thing in the world. It's all free.
You don't even have to leave your desk, right? You can do it all right here in this little box around you. I know. And it's brilliant. And I think that I think that, yeah, again, copywriters do that, but as usual, maybe I'm going to rant for a bit here, but we do things and we don't, and we just accept them as part of how it has to work. But I feel like there's sort of this sense that you should get a bit of a pat on the back in marketing today if you go do research. Like, I'm seeing that in a lot of blogs where people are like, oh, good on you for picking up the phone and calling customers. And I'm like,
what?
How the hell else are you going to do it? Right?
Yeah.
What do you mean good on? I mean, sure, good on you. Just like good on you for putting your pants on this morning. Good
exactly.
on you for the most basic things.
That's right. For continuing
so anyway,
to breathe.
Like, it's confusing to me a bit, especially as a copywriter.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's just a matter of perspective, because when things become democratized outside of the way things are done rightly in an existing industry, you know, that's why, honestly, Copyblogger came into existence 9 years ago. You know, it's the direct response people weren't, the tactics I was teaching weren't any different. It was the context in which they were applied. And it's funny that the newer people eventually seem to get it, and yet some of the old school people still don't get it. And I find that odd too. But maybe, you know, when you're hitting the mailbox for your whole career, you just can't shift your mind to social and online. But that's another episode.
I know, right? I've got lots of thoughts.
Okay, so let's assume that we all did the crucial research, the crucial upfront homework to know this prospective audience better than they know themselves. That's the goal, at least.
Yes.
And so we've made some educated guesses about theme and the benefit that we're trying to give in exchange for their attention, headlines, you know, copies, all that kind of thing. It's still a new site, though. We've made some educated guesses, but if we're smart, we wrote many headlines and then went with the one we kind of felt was best, but we don't know for sure. And this might be where some testing may come in handy, but if it's a new site and it's not a huge traffic generator, how do you solve that problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, when we're talking about testing, a lot of people say, well, I'll just push some more traffic at it. I'll go buy traffic. But we don't necessarily recommend that. I mean, I think the bigger thing that we'd say to do, I mean, kind of what the statement that we have between Lance and myself is, you know, the lower your traffic, the bigger your changes. So if you decide that you want to test your headline, like you said, but you don't have a lot of traffic, you get like 300 visitors to your homepage a day and you want to test that, your traffic is just going to be really, really low to make that happen. So testing one small thing, the impact is unlikely to be big enough to cause a big win in your testing tool like Optimizely or VWO or whatever it is that you're using to actually run the test, or even if you're using an unbounced landing page, something like that you're testing in. You need to have this huge difference that's measured between your control and that new variation. So a small change on your new variation is unlikely in most cases. I'd say 99% of the time, a small change like just a headline, as important as headlines are, just that alone is unlikely to bring you the huge numbers, the differences that you need, right? You need where if you have like 5 people convert or 25 people clicking through on your homepage a day, let's say per variation, you need the control, let's say, to keep having that 25 people clicking through, but you need the variation to get like 75, 100 people clicking through. You need huge differences in order for that test to ever get to point of completion. If it's 25 versus 30, the numbers are way too low to say anything about it, right? So that's really for us the big thing that we try to recommend is if your traffic is low, make sure that new creative that you test against the control is dramatically different.
Yeah, I kind of figured that out myself. like I said, we've got split testing tools built into the Rainmaker platform, which are really simple to use, and it's tempting to just jump right into it. And then I started looking around online going, what's going to make this statistically significant? And I ran straight into that problem. Now, when we test on StudioPress or Copyblogger, traffic is not a problem. It's huge, right?
Yeah.
So It's just an issue that I really wanted to address with someone like you. So, okay, before we look at maybe some alternatives, what is the lowest amount of conversions per option that you would consider something even paying attention to? I found some stuff online, but I don't want to say anything. I want to hear it from you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, and there's a lot online. I was speaking at Unbounce's CTA conf last September, and I always pronounce his last name wrong. I get the first name right, but I don't get his last name right. But from Conversion XL, I think he was quoting somebody who said, I might be getting this wrong. Forgive me if I'm getting this wrong. But it was so dramatic a number that it's like it might as well have been a million. I think said 350 paid conversions per variation. And I'm like, in crazy land, like there's no way a small business. Yeah. There's absolutely. So you're saying then, and I'm not accusing Pep of this. I know he's got other strategies, but it really does sound like the takeaway is, oh crap, if I'm not Amazon, I can't test. And so I don't think that I haven't seen that you have to have that many, like 250 or 350 paid conversions per variation in order for it to be a statistically confident test. And I guess, sure. If for me, I look at things like, the data is good and you have to listen to the data and follow what it says and pay attention and don't jump to your own conclusions, right? Or say, oh, it looks like it's trending up, so we're just going to call it a winner and go.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think waiting around for these huge numbers is actually something that's not going to happen in a lot of cases. So we like to see about 100 conversions per variation of whatever that is. So it's unlikely that on a homepage, I would never myself, at least unless it's a one pager site, I wouldn't expect a homepage to be responsible for a paid conversion. But for a micro conversion, like a click through, definitely. Right. So if you get 100 people clicking through on each variation at minimum. Right. And then, of course, from that point, using the calculators that are available within the tool and on sites like Evan Miller's calculators that are a great backup or a great second place to go to confirm that the data is good rather than just trusting VWO or Optimizely. But get to that, you know, about 100 if you can. And that means usually for a lot of sites running your tests for well over a month. But that's what we like to see. Others say more. I think that more is often, I mean, would you rather, I hesitate.
Well, okay.
Because,
go ahead. Let me reassure you because 100 is the number I use.
Okay, good.
And in this context, obviously we're talking about email opt-ins, which, you know, is a discrete action, of course, that does not rise to the level of paid. And yet it is definitely trackable. So everything you've said so far, I figured out kind of in my own experience. I tested a how-to versus this basically the same substantive headline, thinking how to would kill it, and it wasn't significant, the change, because it's too similar. Then I tested another idea that was completely, it was almost a different positioning statement that I had had in my research. You know, it was almost like another way to go. And my first choice of headline destroyed the radically different one. Yeah. Which, you know, score one for intuition, but, you know, it's not intuition. It's like hardcore paying attention and, you know, understanding what these people respond to, even though you're not currently serving them. So we're going to go back and say, start with research every question of this show.
But, I know, right? That's always the answer. and podcast. That's it. It's answered.
Okay, so let's assume we've got enough traffic and we can do the 100 conversion threshold in a reasonable amount of time. Let's say it's a week or something. My, you know, rule of thumb has always been you test the headline first, because if people don't make it past the headline, what does it matter if your button text is optimized, you know? Now, do you agree with that? And regardless, what are your tips as far as testing headlines? You already gave us one.
No, Brian, I disagree with you.
Okay, cool.
Just kidding. No, and only, okay, so this is why I hesitate there. So For me, I know headlines are very, very important. Absolutely. But of course, as I talked about at Authority, the button is that site of conversion, right? It's where the activity happens, of course.
Yeah.
Hugely important headline, but I would say that the button is equally important, and I would further say that they work together. So we've actually run a few tests, and we reported on one of them this fall. We ran this test on a UK fashion site called Drsippy, drsippy.com. And we were doing this something like our hypothesis was really, okay, does risky or I guess our research question was really, does riskier copy lead to bigger conversion wins, largely because you're actually, you know, saying something that's sticky and noticeable. So we were testing on a bunch of different sites around this. So we had a whole bunch of headlines that we were testing on different sites. And Drsippy was one of them. And so we tested these two headlines against each other. One, the control was clothes you'll love, perfect for your shape and style. Okay, perfectly fine homepage headline. And then the one we tested against it, which we pulled from some language that one of their prospects or someone who fits into their market was, they were saying stuff like this on this forum. The women were talking to each other. No, they're targeting women, sorry. They were talking to each other on this fashion type forum. And they were saying things like, I've got a big bum and that's not good on my bum, or, oh, my waist is too thick for that. So against the headline, clothes you love, perfect for your shape and size, style, we tested the headline, big bum, thick waist, not so perky boobs, find outfit you love, or you'll look fab in just as you are. So it was much bigger, right? Of course, a longer headline, but it had these stickier words in it, things that people perhaps weren't going to see a lot online, but it was language that we saw they were using. So we thought it was a good test. Okay. But we tested it and we saw, you know, about a 15% lift that held throughout the test for a couple weeks, but it didn't actually reach confidence. It never got to a place of confidence. We were like, what the hell? This test, this headline is, in my humble opinion, superior to the non-sticky one that it was being tested against, right? It should be doing something, even if that means polarizing people. The polarized group that is pro it, unless they're a very small group, shouldn't they be acting on it? So from that point, I was like, okay, well, let's take a look at the button. And the button on there, which is, again, the point of conversion, the site of conversion, is was sign up now. So we had that on both variations. And I was like, ooh, sign up now is a terrible button, right? I would never recommend that as a button. It's, you know, it's the action you're about to take, but there's no value associated with it.
Yep.
So we were like, okay. So I tested, again, we ran another test where we had those same two headlines tested against each other. But on the second one, I think it was only the second one, yeah, we tested show me outfits I'll love as the button copy on there. And that we saw get 124% lift in clicks with 100% confidence, and that held for weeks. I think we just left it running even for beyond, like, I think it was 6 weeks. It was so dramatically different. That was simply, we had a good headline, two great headlines against each other. But once we optimized the button as well, we saw that headline better. It was able to perform better, I think, because it wasn't restricted by this really sucky button that was holding it back before. Does that make sense?
It does. And I have to admit, I kind of set myself up there because I knew you were going to say that. And
I knew you knew. I wasn't afraid to say I disagree with you.
But it's so prevalent that we think the headline is just God. And it is so important in content and copy. But I think I love that story, and I love you elaborated on it at the event. And it was such – that's why I think you blew people away, because you were – scientifically and very politely, in the most Canadian sense, destroying a bunch of myths that we all carry around with each other. So, yes, thank you for disagreeing with me, although I was being a little sly there.
Thank you for setting me
up. Okay, then I'm going to put you on the spot here. In the context of opt-ins, getting the email address, what's your favorite button copy, to the extent you can choose something that might work better than most, as opposed to subscribe, which is awful.
Yeah. So I like to, I think that the easiest trick, if you're going to test something on, like, let's say that sidebar where you've got the opt-in form on the sidebar bar or a pop-up for exit intent pop-up. I've found that typically a great winner and a consistent winner is to take whatever your headline is, which usually I don't know that I've seen many that don't begin with an action word like get. So the headline has some sort of action-y statement in it. Mm-hmm. Just repeat that in the button. We've seen that work all over the place, and not just for opt-ins, but especially for opt-ins. So if you say, get the conversion rate kit, then the button may be just get the kit.
Yeah.
So that's not a very sexy test, but it seems to work again and again and again. If the headline attracted them, if they liked that and there's an action to it, then why not just repeat it in the button?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. It's action oriented, and it's mirroring continuing the scent that Brian Eisenberg likes to talk about, right?
Totally. So,
yeah. Excellent. That's worth the price everyone has paid so far already. And we joke around that I just invite my friends on for free consulting and then share it with everyone, you know.
That's awesome.
Okay. So I did want to primarily focus on email, and I do, of course, want to respect your time. But let me ask you just a couple of things about when we're actually selling something, services or products, because Lance had a great article just a few days ago that I found very interesting, and it had a nice little clickbait title, but he totally backed it up with some really smart ideas. But before we get to that, so when you've got a sales page, you know, you've got a headline benefit oriented, you've got features that are written in terms of benefits, if you're doing baseline best practices as it is. From there, how do you develop one or more hypotheses that tell you what to test at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a really good question, and it's hard for a lot of people to do. It's so hard, I think, that people don't do it. Which is problematic, of course. So I like to break it up into two simple things. As you said, Lance writes great posts on testing. I write posts on copy. So Lance is definitely, like, he's into the science of it all.
Yeah.
So I run my stuff by him and have him approve it. So for me to get my head around it, I like to have a problem statement followed by a couple research questions, and I choose one of those and build creative against it. So, right, first, obviously, considering your conversion goal and going through all those things that you normally do to land at a point where you've identified an opportunity on your site. And it's really there. So the problem statement is, you know, a question around what's keeping people from converting at this point. Let's say you've identified, again, we're talking about sales funnels now, but you've identified that on your product catalog, there's a high exit rate on there. So people are not converting, they're leaving instead of even moving forward. So if your goal is to get them to choose one of those products or a category to move forward with, okay, that's your conversion goal. Choose one. Okay, great. So they have to click. It'll be an engagement test. Perfect. And then, of course, it's a matter of identifying what's getting in the way of them moving forward or what's making them want to exit on this page. And that's where, obviously, at that point, we look to the creative in most cases, right? But obviously, there's lots of ways to go about this. But I would say, okay, well, if they're exiting here, it's probably got something to do with what they're failing to find on the page. So it might not be the right information that they need, blah, blah, blah. Or the way that the information is presented is wrong. So as usual, it comes down to the what versus the how. Mm. And you have to, of course, in that, identify which one of those it is. And so that's where we would like to, at that point, if I said, okay, the product catalog is brutal, we're losing people, it's bleeding all of our visitors, we're paying for all the people to come here, and now they're all just exiting before they ever get to a product detail page. Okay, well, let's go and run a usertesting.com session, or about five of those, and see what people are saying when they're on this page. So we'd go at that point, listen to a lot of what people are doing and saying, like watch what they're doing on the page, listen to what they're saying about the page. And then from there, try to, if it means doing maybe a Qualaroo pop-up survey as well to get a sense for what they came to this page to do or what their expectations were, that can help us see if it's a what or a how. Now, the what is, of course, are the right products on this page? Are they organized in such a way that it's easy? I guess organization is kind of a how. But if it's, you know, buying boots and they're on a catalog page for boots, but they had an expectation that they'd be able to sort them by, you know, tall boots and short boots, but they can't do that. So that's all, you know, that's what's wrong with the page. And that could identify, that could help us understand what we need to do to optimize this page. And now that leads to a question, which is the hypothesis, or phrased another way, it's your research question, if you pose it like a question, obviously. And that could be, okay, if we add better filtering on this page or better ways to filter through the products, will we see a lift in click-throughs? That's how we would get to the point of identifying what's wrong with it. First, what page is causing the problem that's keeping you from getting that conversion? Mm-hmm. And then ask, listen, and watch what people are doing on it and develop an hypothesis from there. And of course, you want to go with ideally the one that's the lowest hanging fruit, right? So if only one person says, oh, I thought I could sort by short versus tall boots, but other people are saying, this is like, who is anybody else even using this site? There's where it's indicating that there's no social proof or a lack of authority about the site. Then, you know, you choose the best one between those two possible problems and test from there. And then, of course, when you set up that good hypothesis or it's informed by something, and you can say something as specific as, will adding filtering or sorting to this page increase my conversion rate? Then you go add that filtering or sorting, and then you see if it did or didn't. Then you actually have an answer and you can move forward with that, and you can take away that learning, which is more important in most cases, I would say, than just a lift in conversion.
Yes.
That's absolutely a long answer, I know.
It's a long answer, but there's this recurring theme of listen, watch, observe.
Yeah.
And if I, at the risk of oversimplifying Lance's post, he said, you know, if you're selling stuff to people and you don't know necessarily, or why would you jump straight to testing? Why don't you talk to them first? Okay. And it's so simple. And he wasn't denigrating testing. Of course, Lance would not denigrate testing. No. And yet people don't start at the right place. So you mentioned some really cool tools where you can listen, but yeah, why not just talk to the people who bought from you and find
it's
out
so
some
true
stuff right there?
Yes. Yeah. I think when you're trying to identify what's wrong with a page, it can be a little, it can be a little tough. That's where I think usertesting.com and Qualaroo are fantastic. When you've got a page identified and you're not, you could sit around at a table brainstorming what's wrong with it. But again, you're not, I learned this from Copyblogger too, right? You're not your audience.
Right.
So listen to your audience first, get them. And I know like with usertesting.com, the objection is, well, are they really my prospect? Right. And of course, user testing has that new peak service where you can get your actual visitors at the time they're on your site to opt in to share their feedback with you at that point. So there are options and ways to get around it, but I've found that it's a really great way if you want to find out what's wrong with a page, get people on that page to try to use it. Don't ask them to tell you what's wrong with it, because oh Lord, it'll get awful. But
yeah,
but watch them and listen to them, and that can lead to great hypotheses.
Awesome, Joanna. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm still getting over the fact that you're not rejoining us this year, but you did have a good excuse. So
you too. It's U2's world tour. Their opening night, Brian. Opening night.
Wait a minute. I thought you were helping your sister with her food truck. I think I've been bamboozled here.
No, I told you. Right. Remember in Twitter, I was like, oh yeah, I think I'm doing my sister's food truck. But that was just because I have like two sisters and they're constantly asking for things. No, I'm just kidding. But the other one wanted to go to U2. And I was like, I know I'm doing something with my sister's.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, okay, so Bono wins over me. Fine.
One time.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thank you again, and I can't wait to do something else with you guys. We got to have Lance on the show, obviously, And I've already got you down for 2016, so don't even try.
I'm on it. It's in my calendar. I can't wait.
All right. Take care. Bye, everyone.
Bye.